Hello and welcome to Radio EduTalk. This is David Noble, this evening broadcasting from the stunningly beautiful Isle of Barra in the Western Isles of Scotland. And I'm delighted to welcome back onto the show, Keir Bloomer. Welcome again to EduTalk, Keir.
Hello, David.
And this evening, for the next 15 to 20 minutes or so, we're going to be talking about the topic of empowering schools. And just to start off with, Keir, could you give listeners a kind of brief background to your career in education and your current roles?
Well, I've been professionally involved in Scottish education now for 50 years, so I've done quite a few things in that time. But specifically, I've been a Director of Education and a Council Chief Executive. At the moment, I chair the Tapestry Partnership, which, as I'm sure most of your listeners know, is a very substantial CPD organisation. Also the Commission on School Reform and the Education Committee of the Royal Society of Edinburgh.
Thanks very much. And to start off with, Keir, could you give us a bit of the kind of context of the whole topic of empowering schools with regards to the Scottish Government's review into school governance and the Headteachers Charter?
Yes. I am concerned that Scottish education is far too uniform, and a system which is uniform does not have the capacity to learn from its own experience because its own experience is all the same. We have a need for variety, and the best way of introducing greater variety into the system is to empower individual schools, because in that way you will get more innovation and there will be a much greater range of innovations taking place. At the same time, I think the government is moving in this direction because it is worried about lack of change. Over the last few years, the government has tried to do a great many different things and they have not had the impact that I think the government expected them to have. So it is looking round for a different lever to pull, and it has settled upon changes in school governance as one that is very much worth trying.
So when did the review start, and you know, how far has it gone thus far?
Well, the review really started about 3 years ago. The government has issued two consultation papers over that time, and it was working up to publishing a bill which would have had the effect of giving statutory force to a head teacher's charter. The terms of that bill were made known before the summer, but at the same time, the Deputy First Minister said that he was not actually going to introduce the legislation. Instead, he hoped to be able to proceed on the basis of consensus while keeping legislation in reserve. So we've been through quite a long process, one in which I have to say I don't think the government made out the case for governance reform as effectively as it might have done, and there was unquestionably a substantial body of opposition. So it has now clearly decided to change tactic and tried to proceed by agreement between itself and local authorities and their umbrella organisation, COSLA. It now has a joint agreement, which does indeed contain, I would think, some of the principles that the government is hoping to see carried into practice. What we will now see over the next few months is how far that kind of voluntary basis will be effective in bringing about the change.
So it sounds like you know, you agree with the Scottish Government that there's a need to review school governance, but can you say a little bit more about what kind of issues there are around the whole notion of empowering schools and indeed, you know, what empowering schools means to yourself, and then how well does that kind of marry up with the Scottish Government's vision?
It's, I think, widely recognised that decisions should be made as close to the point where they have effect as possible. And that is the principle of subsidiarity, which has been around for centuries. It actually started in the Catholic Church. There is an orthodoxy, though, in Scottish education that the only things that matter, the only things that will bring about improvement are changes in learning and teaching and improvements in leadership. Now, these things are undoubtedly important. I don't argue against them at all. But it is untrue that they are the only things that matter. Well-run systems are likely to be more effective than badly run systems. Eventually, well-run systems will achieve more. They will have higher standards than less well-run systems. So issues of governance, the way in which the system is managed, are not, as some of the people opposed to the government's agenda have tried to argue, irrelevant, possibly even a distraction. They're quite central to the overall issue of school improvement. I think the kind of issues that are involved here is, if we are going to continue to have basically three tiers of organisation within Scottish education, national, local authority level and school level, how should the balance of power be distributed amongst these three tiers? You could indeed question whether three is too many. Undoubtedly, if we're going to move in the direction of empowering schools, there are some very significant challenges. I mean, head teachers have limited powers up until now. If they are handed substantially more powers, there's a huge professional development issue. There's a huge issue, actually, also of professional confidence involved in all of this. And there is a need to resource that kind of way of making decisions. Now, you asked what I thought the school empowerment involved. Well, the government's most recent consultation spoke about four areas in which it would want to see schools empowered. It would want to see head teachers having control over the curriculum, over school improvement, over staffing, and the use of resources. And all of these seem to me to be perfectly appropriate. There are other ways in which you could empower schools, but that is a perfectly good starting point. So I think what we will see over the coming few years, if this voluntary approach works, is schools taking far more control over their own curriculum, their own staffing, the ways of bringing about improvement, and the way in which they use the resources that are allocated to them.
And at this point here, I wonder if there's anything for the systems within Scottish education to learn from research or from international practices.
There's not a tremendous amount of research in this area, and none of it is Scottish. OECD, which, as you know, now has enormous influence over education practically everywhere, does, however, believe that the studies that it has conducted demonstrate that empowerment works.
Yeah, and there must be, we're saying about empowerment works, but there must be implications for parents and carers and obviously for local authorities. So can you outline some of these as it stands at the moment? And then I wonder if you can say something about the regional improvement collaboratives and where they fit within this kind of new policy approach.
Yep. Certainly. I think a very important thing is that parents would have direct access to decision makers who are more powerful than they are at the present time. Very often, if parents make suggestions, make complaints, or simply wish to understand what is happening and why, they're referred by head teachers to local authority decisions which are beyond the control of the head teacher. That is not a very satisfactory position for parents to find themselves in. So if schools, mainly in the person of head teachers, are significantly more empowered at the present moment, there will be much more that head teachers can decide directly, and therefore contact between parents and head teachers is likely to be more productive of positive outcomes than at the present time. It's also worth looking at the opposite side of that coin, which is that head teachers are much more effective advocates of change than anybody else in the system. I mean, who is the most trusted person in the education system? My child's teacher. After my child's teacher comes my child's head teacher. And everybody else, be they directors of education, councillors, ministers, or whomsoever, comes way, way down in the pecking order as far as that is concerned. So if you want to bring about really transformative change in education, you are better relying on the advocacy of head teachers who are trusted than on anybody else in the system. Now, I concede that there are, of course, some instances when, in fact, my child's teacher or my child's head teacher is the least trusted person in education, and that is a situation that has to be confronted actually more effectively than it is being at the present time. But as a general rule, head teachers are trusted, and therefore they are the people best able to communicate with parents. Local authorities have been losing influence within the education system for a very long period of time now. Since the last local government reorganisation, which is more than 20 years ago, local authorities have generally, but not in every case, been smaller than they were under the previous regime. They have been less able to influence the system in any strategic way. They have become much more simply implementers of policy decided by central government. And that tendency has been accelerated by the way in which local authority resources have been cut in recent years. In effect, now, they carry out more than anything else a logistical support role. They provide a range of services. And they're decreasingly able to provide educational support services, which is why the government has decided to introduce regional improvement collaboratives. I'm a bit at a loss over this one, because if you aggregate the resources of half a dozen, let us say, education authorities who are inadequately resourced, then what you have is still an inadequately resourced collaborative serving an even wider area. So as far as I'm concerned, the jury is very much out on the regional improvement collaboratives. I remain to be convinced that they will be able to add something to the system, but they're only in their first year, so we need to wait and see what actually transpires.
And Keir, you've kind of outlined some of the potential pitfalls ahead, and I take it these are mostly then around accountability for what seems like a kind of more of a bottom-up system, and also in terms of resources, because, you know, surely head teachers in small primary schools who maybe have a teaching commitment as well, are not going to welcome this new empowerment.
I think most head teachers, probably almost all head teachers, welcome empowerment in principle. But you are quite right that the smaller the school, the more head teachers will worry about whether they actually have the management capacity in their school to carry out the new role, which is why I am a bit surprised at the lack of emphasis so far on the role of clusters. The way of resolving this problem is to aggregate the capacity of schools. And the way in which you do that is by looking to the local cluster of schools, the secondary school, the associated primary schools, perhaps some other schools of different kinds that are in the area. Most of the management resource of the education service is, in fact, at school level. And if it's aggregated in that way and deployed sensibly, then I think all schools would be in a position to fulfil the kind of empowered remit that is now being expected of them.
And I mean, Moen roles within the independent sector, but I wonder, have we seen yet within local authority schools the introduction of business management support, or is that something which is still to come in, possibly after we get new models of governance in place?
There is business management in place in the state sector. In fact, there has been since the first introduction of what was then called Delegated Management of Resources, now Devolved School Management, by the old Strathclyde region more than 20 years ago. The extent of that support varies widely from one authority to another, and there are places where I don't think it is by any means adequate. But again, I turn to the important role of the cluster. Business management could be focused at that level rather than at the level of the individual school. And I think that that would make for a much more effective deployment of resources and the engagement, indeed, of much more highly qualified people to carry out the remit.
And just finally, Keir, what are your kind of final thoughts on where we are at the moment and indeed where we might go next with this?
Well, as far as where we're going next, the starting point is a joint agreement involving the government, COSLA, local authorities, and ADES and SOLIS. The government is relying on a voluntary approach. I do not know how that will work. I don't suppose they know at this moment either. But they are right that if they can secure cooperation from the other partners, then things could move more quickly and more flexibly through that kind of voluntary action than it would do through legislation. But of course, they are keeping legislation in reserve in case things don't work out particularly well. I think that one of the significant dilemmas in Scottish education is that teachers have enormously strong feelings of responsibility towards, above all, children, also their families, to some extent local communities. But they are not actually accountable to any of these people. They are accountable to local authorities, to some extent to national government, even perhaps to the inspectorate, to whom they have no particularly strong feelings of responsibility. So reconciling formal accountability with professional feelings of responsibility seems to me to be the absolute key to the empowerment agenda.
Keir, thank you so much for taking time out this evening to join us on Radio Edu Talk. You've given us lots to think about, and look forward to inviting you back on the show in the future.